And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. What a great crowd we have out there tonight with us already. And we have Carolyn Kat Goida out there running the Ideas Room. And it's great to see so many familiar faces out there already tonight. This is a very special report going deep into some of the disinformation programs that are out there, and really in particular, what they've been hitting with trying to push this domestic terror bill, which is basically a shutdown of any opposition to this cabal, as it were, of news media and the Davos crowd and the Gates Empire and our lovely friends in the Democratic Party. Now, it's very interesting because, of course, right or left, nobody should be interested in silencing anyone else. And this is particularly true across the world, but in America, where enshrined in the very Constitution, free speech is right there. So when we look at this kind of deep state program, we're going to look and see that it's breaking down on the surface. And we're going to see how we can capitalize on that and really bring some of these things home. I also want to say that we're going to go deep tonight into some strange, and I mean strange, efforts by the CIA to simultaneously promote the UFO issue and the UFO threat while coming up with a completely idiotic historical push by James Woolsey, who's the former CIA director, around the JFK assassination of all things, and painting the old Russia is to blame push in a new book that he has. And very mysteriously, his co-author actually died. So there's some unusual things about that book, and we're going to get into that as we go. We have a lot to get to, and of course, we have some X-series episodes coming up. What's going to happen? I want to do a little bit of filler here for everyone. So the X-Series 100 episode is a three-parter, and it has been heavily laid out. And I'm going to be doing that with Miss Olivia when she comes back. We're going to do it a week from Friday, which is actually the three-year anniversary of the X-Series. So I hope everyone's going to enjoy that. And this Friday, however, we are running a very interesting exclusive about the Hot Zone. So remember to tune in on Friday for the X series, and then X100, the three-parter, starts a week from Friday on the third year anniversary of the X series. And so there we go with that. Now, let's get into this right off the bat. What I see, the seams of this are kind of coming apart. It's the state of emergency that they're trying to keep us in, and then the emergency powers that they're able to seize while they are grabbing at that emergency ring. Now, this goes all the way back, of course, in history. One of the more, interesting allegories to this would be Hitler taking power, and that was in 1933. But in 1934, the Enabling Act, which allowed him to combine the offices of the president and also his role as chancellor. So he became the supreme leader, and that's how Germany just, became the entire Nazi state and just plunged into that situation. Well, they're building a very similar situation now, and they use the deep event of January 6th, where we had so many agent provocateurs on the scene, and they had such a media spin ready that that's their Reichstag fire. And now they think they can rifle through this domestic terror bill. But there are signs on the right and the left and in the middle and at all, sizes of the map that this is just not going to happen. So there's going to be a lot of opposition, and how that opposition goes down and how it exposes this, deep state push for a takeover is going to be very important all around. So let's look at some of those fissures. I've been saying here for a while that there are people on the left who I think are great voices. I call them, really, they're the disaffected left, because they realize that the Democratic Party left them. And, there's so many people who are on different sides of the political fence, but the issues that are going on now are fascism. And so there's no right or left when it comes to opposing that and the shutting down of free speech and, mandatory this, mandatory that, and martial law and things of this nature. That's where we all get together and push back legally and peacefully, but with a very strong voices heard on every platform possible. Of course, the platforms are doing their very best to silence us as well, but we're getting over that, as you can see right here. Now, here's the first kind of note of interest, and that is becoming totalitarian state under Biden, which is absolutely true. That is Naomi Wolf, who, by the way, worked in Democratic politics and helped Al Gore during the 2000 election, was just very active in that party, and now is one of the most outspoken opponents of the whole thing. So just absolutely crucial on that. So she has studied fascism and totalitarianism for many years, and she put a book together about a decade ago about the 10 steps that would take us there, and she says that we're now at step number 10, and that is the silencing of the opposition, that is taking away free speech. So this, I think, is very interesting. As a former Clinton advisor, she went on Fox News because she'd be boycotted anywhere else. And this is an interesting trend that I see happening where the conservative aspects are getting together with the disaffected liberal aspects, and the libertarians are coming through the middle there ever since the CIA drone king, John Brennan, who was Obama's CIA director after all, said, oh, you know, libertarians are domestic terrorists. Well, I mean, there are millions of libertarians. It was a completely ridiculous comment. And Brennan, you know, Brennan really has that very strange background. And this is somebody who is also has his fingers in the UFO file pie, along with James Woolsey, who's another CIA director. We're going to get to both of them in a minute. But I want to read a little bit of Naomi Wolf's statement, who's been very outspoken in a good way about getting the facts on this, is really pushing the envelope around the coronavirus and how it's been used to piggyback fascism. So she's right on there. And I can tell you that I've been doing a lot of outreach and talking with a lot of people on that side of the fence, and they are outraged at the things that are going on. So I see a lot of forces getting together on this. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're doing a special report here. We're going to go about an hour, and we're going to expose this state of emergency powers and the deep state control that they're trying to just put us in a corner with. Some of the people on the left I'm spotlighting who are speaking out about this because they need to push back against their Democratic power base in that's already in power. And that Democratic power base wants to silence them just as much as they want to silence people who are libertarians or anyone who opposes this kind of Gates New World Order. Okay, so author and former Clinton advisor Naomi Wolf warned Monday that the U.S. is devolving into a police state under the Biden administration as endless lockdowns and restrictions show no signs of being lifted. Appearing on Tucker Carlson, Wolf urged that the U.S. is moving into a coup situation. I could not have said that better, and we've been saying that for many months on this program. Under Democratic rule, owing to medical mandates that extend under the guise of a real medical pandemic. Wolf emphasized that lockdowns have never been done in society, and really, we are turning into a totalitarian state before everyone's eyes. Now think about that. This is somebody like identifiably on the left who is noticing it. Now they're going to move to silence her, of course, and they have moved to silence many voices on the left and on the right. So sometimes, you know, I'll get these people who will be on the left and they'll write to me and say, well, you know, I don't like Trump, so that's good, whatever is going on. You know, if they take away his constitutional rights or whatever, that's a good thing. And I always say it's not, because regardless of who you back, it doesn't matter. If you back Bernie Sanders or Trump, the thing is, the Constitution is the rule of the land, and we exchange ideas and the freedoms, and we fought for those freedoms. So if somebody just rolls in and takes them away from anybody, it's a crime against everybody. It has to be acknowledged that way. I have no idea how the political polarization, aside from the mind control in the media, but how the political polarization could get that bad that people would start thinking, well, it's a good thing if my enemy is silenced and can't get, you know, somebody that I don't politically agree with. You know, is silenced and that they can't get their word out and their votes don't matter and we should stop those people from voting. Those are fascist inclinations. So whatever the media has done to you, you're going to have to stop and look in the mirror and say, what has become of me? Because, you know, you were thinking like a totalitarian, and we see it in all of these liberal publications that are supposed to be promoting, well, you know, we're liberals and we believe in freedom, except if you don't think exactly the way that we do. So this is the major danger there, as it's been, you know, it was a danger on the right in past times. You know, the kind of Falwell, if you don't believe as I do, you're damned type politics. But I think that this is particularly pernicious and dangerous because it's being aided by a foreign country. And especially China's role in this and their positioning to knock the United States out as the world's number one power, and using people like Gavin Newsom and Pelosi and Biden, whose ties to China are just off the charts. And that, you know, that whole system of the Twitter and Facebook and Google, they tried really hard to, you know, hide that. And, but those people and all the jobs that we shipped over to China and the entrance of China into the WTO in the 90s under Clinton, this is where things went wrong. And this was all done for economic purposes, but China had the human rights record of, you know, Pol Pot. I mean, they had such a bad human rights record that the idea of using the same labor force to produce goods for the United States was very attractive to these corporations because they didn't care. They just wanted to make, you know, the incredible money that they could. And so we saw that they moved these factories wholesale over to China and created this incredible industrial base. Now, I'm sure this could have been done on some level, on an even-keeled level, where we had traded with China and it would have been a win-win situation. And instead, it became this whole backdoor maneuvering. And, you know, China's human rights records and their entire way of dealing with their workers is, you know, has been the cause and the center of, you know, from slave labor in Nike factories to suicide nets in Apple factories. It's just well known. So the corporations made these deals and they shipped basically most of our industrial base over there. And they got rich off doing it, but they destroyed our industrial base to a large degree. And that was one of the reasons why when Trump was bringing it back, there was so much opposition, because the Googles, the Gates, and you know, the Dorseys, the Zuckerbergs, the Davos crowd, their whole thing is they want a China-style system, which is basically communist control, but it acts like it has capitalism. And, you know, they've shown with the social credit score and the other things that they want to do that complete control of their citizens. They cannot stand any dissent, you know, and it's up to the people in China to help overthrow that. But in the United States, we shouldn't have to put up with it. We have a constitution that gives us freedom. And we fought for that over 200 years ago from King George. And so now they're trying to say, well, we have an electronic King George coming your way. And this is the nature of the situation that we're in. So I think what we're going to see with the media trying to control this narrative so that anyone who disagrees with the things that are going on and the incredible like fascist lockdowns and things of this nature, if they don't silence that, if they let people talk, then obviously people will do things like expose Gates. And as we saw last year, he was very heavily exposed, and whoever got him out there at first gave him some really bad information. And the information was, go out there and you'll look like a hero. But in fact, the alternative media saw through him pretty fast. And people in tech media like myself, you know, I had a 10-year tech career as a magazine editor, and I know all about Gates. And, you know, Gates is one of the most unethical people on the planet. So the idea of him being like some savior or something, I mean, this is just the largest shareholder of Microsoft. and his own weird foundation, which has been kicked out of so many countries for tampering with their population and doing experiments. So we're looking really at Nuremberg-style considerations around somebody like Gates. But the money is flowing heavy. So, you know, we see Anderson Cooper sitting down, pandering to him and saying, is it hard to think about saving the world the way that you do? It's another tough question. Like, is it hard saving the world and saving the planet, or is it harder saving humanity? Which one is more difficult for you, Bill? So, you know, these are the kind of softball questions that you get in that controlled media world. It's like a strange simulation. But what I would say, and one of the kind of key areas I think that we're looking at, is that the opposition, people like RFK Jr. exposing, the injectables fraud and getting to the real numbers around these things and showing why the lockdowns don't work and why they take a much bigger toll. And now Naomi Wolf getting together with people on the conservative side and exposing this. It's not a right or left issue anymore. This is all hands on deck to stop the fascists. And, and using the platforms and the things that we have while that window of opportunity is open. So this is what we're on board with right off the bat. So we got more on the opposition around this. That was Wolf. I've also been telling you about Greenwald. And this is very interesting because Greenwald is somebody who gets a great deal of respect because he brought out all the Edward Snowden revelations. And he's also proven time and again, when they fired him at New York Times because he wouldn't toe the line, et cetera, that he is somebody who will come out and really deliver the truth. And even if he's coming from the left, if you're on the right, you can respect him. But if you're in the center, you just see these are people who are really interested in the truth, and it doesn't matter what their politics are. More and more, I see that the division in the media that they've created in people's minds was, if things could go wrong, like they could always blame a Trump character, and then people who didn't like Trump could always say, well, it doesn't matter, what the Constitution is, I want to get Trump. And so they built up these kind of hate matches so much. It's like the 2 minutes hate in 1984 that I cite so often, when they would have to go out and stare at a big film of Goldstein who had betrayed the party. And then, they're so brainwashed and they get whipped up into this frenzy, and then they're okay. They walk away. They can go about their daily lives. So they've been giving us that with this whole kind of, Hillary and Trump, this whole battle royal of these different types that people would hate. So they've stoked that hate, and in the background they've been making incredible profits. Jeff Bezos of Amazon added tremendous amount of money to his empire during the pandemic. Bill Gates did the same thing. Elon Musk, the whole scene just keeps growing and growing while people on Main Street, are suffering and their jobs are gone. Their businesses have been destroyed. Their buildings are getting knocked down to make way for smart cities. And, this is the nature of the situation that we're in and why we need to wake up to it. Now, one of the good things that have happened is accidentally, and this does happen once in a while, people like Andrew Cuomo, Governor Cuomo of New York, who was one of the biggest fascist lockdown people, his activities in causing all those nursing home deaths by putting the COVID patients there instead of in these other facilities that they had built, and in saying, well, kids shouldn't go to school, let's actually end schools and we'll do it virtually from now on. We'll tear down all those buildings. And he's got a partnership with Bill Gates where they can make smart cities with those buildings. And hey, New York will be this whole thing. So they really destroyed New York in many ways. But he did get into trouble because his aide was talking to a number of Democratic congressmen and was recorded. And she didn't realize it, obviously. And she said, it's too bad. I'm sorry we lied about the nursing home deaths. We just didn't know what to do because we thought that whole narrative would swing back on us. And then that tape got out and now Cuomo is in the hot seat and even his CNN buddies don't want to touch him. So you see these things happen. It's like, in the Bible, they say your sins will find thee out. It is inevitable at a certain point that the New World Order types, just like when they pushed Schwab out there, we're looking at people who have lost touch with their humanity and their ethics. And, little by little, although they have this incredible grid of control through the media and through publications and through foundations and grants and all the money and everyone sticking around for the money, in truth, there's a lot of vulnerability in that system. And there are people who I respect greatly, like Catherine Austin Fitz, who actually comes up in tonight's report. Secretary Fitz, who we're going to interview here soon to get her take on everything that's going on, she actually has said that she doesn't think, in the grand scheme of things, that what they're pushing for, this kind of transhumanist push to dominate everything digitally is going to work, and that we have to be ready in the background with our own system ready to go. That is, has our own flow of currency and our own flow of food sources and all kinds of things. So it's quite a project. And this is the discussion where the discussion is leading us tonight as we're looking at what these emergency powers and the emergency powers that they're seizing are always giving humanity totalitarian backlash, whether it's Mussolini or Hitler or Stalin and, George Bush after 9/11 and the Patriot Act and all that insanity. And now they're trying to do it again with this domestic terror bill. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We are deep in a special report here on emergency powers and this deep state lockdown that we've been witnessing. We have Kat out there running the ideas room. There's a lot of familiar faces out there. And when we come back with the X series, we're going to be taking your questions there. I want to remind you to go to the Dark Journalist website at darkjournalist.com to sign up for our newsletter. And that's something where basically you're going to, about once a week, you'll get something in your inbox. And it's so important because these networks, although many new ones are popping up, and I'm very grateful for that. But the networks that we're on, I'd actually like to see them turn their course and embrace free speech. I don't think that they're going to, but it would be better for us and them and the population. But in the grand scheme of things, we know that they've been throwing people off left and right who they didn't like, and it started with, people on the left a couple of years ago. Then they throw off Alex Jones. Regardless, Rush Limbaugh died this week, and I was thinking a lot about his legacy and how people really polarized about him. They really love him or they really hate him or whatever. But he was out there and he was talking about issues, and that's what we need. People from all different sides of the spectrum. And Rush certainly set the tone for the shock jock and somebody who really had an incredible following and got everyone in that political, really looking through the administrations and stuff, whether you agreed with him or not. So I've never spent a lot of time with conservative radio, but I could appreciate somebody, having those ideas out in the public and really having that kind of following. So he did a great job with it. And I was thinking, these people that are trying with the censorship on, the Twitter, Facebook style censorship and on these platforms, they don't want that kind of conversation. And yet it is fundamental to American history, the free speech, and we cannot lose it. And this is the window of opportunity where we need to make our voices heard about it and support those that are delivering the message. So it's so important to do that. And I try to look at ways I can do that every day because I think, it's the kind of thing that Benjamin Franklin said, it's a republic if you can keep it. And so we need to get busy keeping it as it goes. But in terms of the newsletter, yeah, that'll keep us in touch regardless of if any network decides, hey, we're going to get rid of everybody, especially that dark journalist guy off of the airwaves, then we'll have that direct back and forth. And basically, you'll have all the incredible shows right there in your newsletter. So make sure that you go ahead and do that. Okay, next up, UFOs, the CIA, and JFK all in one week. Isn't that something? It sounds like my kind of a show. All right. Here's a couple of quotes from JFK and MLK. And, I have posited on the show a few times that what we're looking at is they're actually trying in many ways to get rid of what the 60s opened up, which was all kinds of considerations beyond corporate profiteering. There's all kinds of experimentation on spirituality, communes, self-sufficiently, organic food. There were a lot of things that came out of the 60s, and there's a large push for freedom. And one of the things I've pointed out in a few episodes is that we've had situations where they've been buying up things from the 60s, like the Bob Dylan song catalog. And I believe that they want to shut down access to those things eventually and make them kind of like museum pieces. And then you ask yourself, why? why would they want to get rid of the legacy of somebody like Bob Dylan or buy up the Beatles so you couldn't really get your hands on them? And they wouldn't license it out to certain people. Well, there's something deep, deep in the 60s. Joan Baez, Dylan, The Doors, and all of these people, you know, we remember the excesses that came through that period. A lot of those people were targeted, actually, in Haight-Ashbury, as we know. But there was something that was very much about individualism and about freedom. And this was a shock to that system. And they tried all ways to get rid of those people and really to kind of push them off the cliff and marginalize them. But I do believe that when they look back at the 1960s, they have a big problem, because if people now who are growing up now can access that, they can imitate it. And it's sort of like the American Revolution. They want to get rid of that idea. They want you to compare Thomas Jefferson with like a Confederate general. So they set the tone, we'll get rid of the Confederate general, and then we go for Jefferson, and then we go for Lincoln. And then before you know it, all your identity is destroyed. The national identity is destroyed, and this thing moves in and harvests the country and the world. So they want to get rid of that. But it's interesting with the 60s, because over and over again, we see this effort to reprogram us and to try to get us all the way back to that incident of the JFK assassination and spin it somehow. They've never been able to pull that off on the CIA side, and it's their biggest single debacle in the public, because they went out publicly and participated in the assassination of a president. So as it goes, the public doesn't trust the CIA, and if you enlarge that, they don't trust the proclamations from the government, which in order for this to work, they need to. So interestingly enough, what we're seeing is they've tracked this back the same way I have, and they've been going after the JFK assassination. So interestingly enough, here was the quote from JFK, and I was thinking about the domestic crime bill and how this quote from JFK would make him a domestic terrorist under their statute. "Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable." President John F. Kennedy. Dr. Martin Luther King, "If we do not act, we shall surely be dragged down the long, dark, and shameful corridors of time reserved for those who possess power without compassion, might without morality, and strength without sight." It sounds a lot like what's happening in America today. So when we start to kind of wrap our minds around this a little bit, then we see little weird weasel ex-CIA directors coming out of the woodwork saying, "Aha, the JFK assassination was done by the Russians," which is the old misinformation trope. You know, Oswald was a Marxist and all that. You know, he was a communist and he wanted to get even with Kennedy. Doesn't make any sense, right? And also, we know from any kind of legitimate study that Oswald was actually under the employ of a right-wing strongman named Guy Bannister, who was an ex-FBI director. So all the pro-leftist stuff is to infiltrate pro-left groups. He's the original kind of a patsy set up for that. So this came out, Lee Harvey Oswald ordered to kill JFK by Soviets, ex-CIA chief claims. Now, they have a book out there called Operation Dragon, and this is James Woolsey, who was the CIA director under President Clinton, and wouldn't you know it, has a big, big connection to that UFO file. We're going to get into that now. Now, what I looked at with Woolsey, I've done a number of, over the years, Woolsey has popped up a number of times because of his unusual presence in all this. Woolsey, at one point, had a meeting with Stephen Greer and wanted to add him to, just his knowledge base. And then Greer went public with it and was like, "Hey, I'm going to be part of a CIA knowledge base thing." And what you don't do when you deal with the CIA is talk about it. And so they instantly denied that. I have it, the letter somewhere here where they're denying it. But to back up Greer's claim a little bit, here's the letter where Woolsey denied ever doing that with Greer. And I'll read actually a couple of lines from it because it's revealing, and then I'll get back to the JFK part. And again, we're talking about CIA director under President Clinton, James Woolsey. "Dear Dr. Greer, it has come to my attention that the four of us that you have, without giving any of us the opportunity to comment, published a distorted account of a dinner party of 6 years ago at which the four of us, you and your wife, were seated together. In your introduction of your book, Extraterrestrial Contact, published earlier this year, you portray the dinner party conversation, which the four of us listened to your views and politely asked questions, as a briefing. You further assert that Mr. and Mrs. Woolsey reported a UFO sighting and agreed with your views. You include specific allegation quotations from them. None of this is accurate. You've portrayed politeness and acquiescence in questions as affirmations. Your conduct in this matter contravenes both accuracy and simple manners." And it's signed by all the above. Now, Woolsey had to cover himself there because here he's admitting that, you know, he's seeing these UFOs and he's getting information from Greer. Now, I'm sure he didn't give Greer any big inside information at all. He just wanted to see what Greer knew. And but it is interesting, Woolsey, a few years into that period, so that took place 1999. In 1998, he was part of a meeting with a Navy think tank that was trying to recruit one Catherine Austin Fitz to explore the question of extraterrestrial life and how it would impact, the knowledge of extraterrestrial life would impact people here on planet Earth. And they wanted to study it. And Fitz went to that first meeting and later withdrew from the whole thing because she thought there's a lot of shady characters in here. And one of those characters was Woolsey. So Fitz, in reporting that story, it's very interesting because what she says is when she showed up, Woolsey basically like lost his composure. So Woolsey was one of those people in the background who sort of had targeted Fitz for her work in exploring the missing money. So this is all very interesting. But and we also remember that Catherine has told me the story many times that she said, well, you know, I don't know a lot about aliens, so I don't think I'm good for this task force, you know, regardless of all the big people involved. And that this admiral said to her, well, would you like to have lunch with some aliens? Now, whatever you think of that, whether they were setting her up or whatever, she didn't go to the meeting, obviously. But interesting insights when you get around Woolsey and the UFO file. There's a big connection there. So him going all over now and pushing hard that Oswald shot JFK to be a Soviet hero in some kind of weird back around way to push this, you know, Russia bad narrative, and also to get the CIA off the hook finally for the Kennedy assassination, is strange timing. And here we are again. Remember that although President Trump did not release all of the records on the JFK files and didn't get them out of the CIA the way they were ordered to for October 26, 2017, he did get some records out. And he signed a declaration saying in October 2021, those records are supposed to come out. So I think this is to kind of push that off. But there we see it again. You're getting into the CIA coming through and pushing with this, with the Department of Homeland Security, with the NSA, trying to do this kind of dragnet around the American population and others. But that one thing that works in the background in people's minds when they think of this agency is they understand that they were involved in the Kennedy assassination. So they need, as part of this narrative of the domestic terror bill, to go back there and fix that the same way they needed to go back and fix the Roswell thing. And that failed miserably. This will probably fail even worse. Woolsey has kicked around that UFO file and has been in that saga along with John Brennan. Brennan now really pushing and saying, oh, you know, we need to investigate the CIA threat. And then all the CIA people around TTSA, and I think even fans of TTSA would have to admit that that organization is coming apart because it was basically just a CIA front. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. We're here now doing a special report examining some of these trends of emergency powers. And I'm including the UFO file aspect in here because it's going to become more and more important that people understand exactly what they're doing with this and the X technology, which is such a central core of what we do here on the X steganography series. But the X technology, it's a combination of things. It resides inside that UFO file, and it is transformative technology, and I don't believe that they have complete control over it. But whatever the X technology is, which has its tie-ins to things like the Tesla technology, it also acts just like the UFO technology acts. You know, that is, it can be there and disappear, and people, when they're abducted, as we've heard in these stories, walk through walls, and, you know, it can outfly anything that we've seen, etc. And then there's another level of us imitating that. So you have the original technology, the X technology, which the mystery schools kept and were advanced, John Keeley, and this kind of experimentation that was taking place at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. And then you have Tesla and his great efforts. And if his stuff had got out, then we would have been beaming energy the same way we beam wireless communications, and they didn't want that. But then in the middle of that whole situation, as we've outlined on this program, was the Trump family. So under Vannevar Bush and under his guidance, John Trump knew all about the UFO file. And then he was the person who Vannevar Bush sent in to go with the FBI to examine Tesla's papers. So we have that lock there. And I did an episode called Tesla, Trump, and the Time Capsule that outlines a great deal of that. And I won't get into too much of it here, but the upshot is that a lot of the things that we're seeing playing out here that look like just a partisan, you know, fight over things have much deeper roots, in that we need to understand how the UFO file and the technology involved in the UFO file and the apotheum involved in the UFO file, that is the complete sort of breakaway physics, the reality distortion of apotheum, how does that relate to what these people are so freaked out about? And, you know, when we look at it and we see, well, you know, the Trump forces are identified with populism, and this other thing is identified more with the war machine. But when you break that down in terms, you know, if they are in the game over the UFO file, and that includes the Space Force and so many of the other things that we've seen, like Bezos, you know, deciding, I'm going to step down from Amazon and just run Blue Origin, which is his X-Tech space program, and Musk and all this stuff. And in the meantime, they are, you know, loading everybody up with these experimental injectables. We have to start to get into what this is all about. Now, over and over again, when you get around the UFO file, what pops up? The CIA. It's inevitable. And this is what we've been dealing with. So Woolsey coming out and saying, you know, those Soviets, those Russians, they killed Kennedy, is basically like this reanimation of the fact that they've never gotten out of their lie. And the American public, 70% of the American public, never believed that Oswald acted alone. And they still don't. It just didn't work. So you have people, again, going back there in history, and many younger people aren't even familiar with that history. But if they find it and it's not distorted, like I said, was saying earlier about the 1960s, I believe this very strongly, that there's some ingredient there in that setup around the assassination and then the truth wave that came in examining that, that forms the kind of foundation of the alternative media in many ways. And most of the foundation of the alternative media, like people like Mae Brussel, came out of that. They got into it because of the Kennedy assassination, because the government and the media lied outright. So now they're in a situation in the government where they're saying, well, if anyone questions us, they're a terrorist. That's the level that they need to get to. And what's interesting is if you go back and you look at the mystery schools, they left us information that this would happen. And there's actually a very interesting prediction by Rudolf Steiner that there would be a law in America someday. And he pointed to this period past 2000. He was writing in about 1920. And again, he's the kind of scholar and mystic who started Anthroposophy. And he said, well, you know, what's going to happen, actually, is they're going to introduce a law that outlaws thinking. You won't be able to think. And that's exactly what we see happening. If you had a look kind of across time like Nostradamus, what would you say? You'd be like, what's happening is the country's all about free speech, and these people are coming in and saying, if you say anything against the king, you know, King Biden or Queen Kamala, then you're a terrorist. And, you know, because we had this Reichstag fire deep event on January 6th, we can use that. And Mafia Pelosi is in on it and the biggest pusher of the whole thing. She tried to outlaw conservative radio and cable news recently. She had a big meeting. I kid you not. I've been reading all about these Democratic meetings trying to do this. And it's all about ideas and shaping narratives. And what they're afraid of is if people get outside of that narrative, then their whole scheme can't work because they need everybody to be in it. That's a Rockefeller trait. Rockefeller's big thing was, look, if we dominate 80% of that field and 20% is free, then we haven't won at all because we're vulnerable to that 20%. So there's a totality involved in the mentation of these people. It's sort of built in. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. We are in a deep report here. We're going to go a little longer because I have a couple of quick reports. Of course, just to round out the Kennedy part with Woolsey, the CIA. Oh, I have so many things. I'm going to have to save some of them, I guess. But of course, this came out, and I already have covered this, a CIA cover-up alleged in JFK's secret UFO inquiry. So there's no question that the memo came out with Kennedy requesting information from the CIA director about the really intense UFO cases because he wanted to share that with his Russian counterparts. But what happened instead was they decided, oh, he's a national security threat. And then that whole apparatus sprung into motion. People like Douglas Caddy, who I've had on this program, the Watergate lawyer, talked about how E. Howard Hunt, who was the CIA super spy, took him aside and said Kennedy was assassinated over the UFO file. This is very important because regular ufology is not set up to handle it. You need deep state researchers to understand the impact of that. But a lot of deep state researchers don't like to get into the UFO file stuff because for years, before suddenly the New York Times became false, they would just call anybody crazy who was involved with it. So that's like a weird overhang. And so what you have is UFO people who don't quite understand the CIA level involved in the obfuscation. And then you have deep state operators who understand, researchers who understand the CIA deep state aspects, but they're not very into the UFO file. And so it leaves us in a weird place as far as the research is concerned. Okay. One of the things I pointed out to do a kind of a Trump JFK crisscross was that Trump activated JFK's National Security Action Memorandum 57, which basically defunded the CIA and their covert activities and sent it back to the Pentagon. Now, I've been trying to actually get information on how that order is doing because it was enacted, interestingly enough, on January 6th, the same day of the deep event. And you have to wonder about those two things. I believe that as he rescinded, that order has been rescinded under the Biden administration or will be under Burns, who is the CIA director. I don't know if they've gotten around to it yet. So this is what I'm trying to find out. That was the responsibility for paramilitary operations. And Kennedy put that National Security Action Memorandum together in 61 after Dulles and the CIA tried to take over Cuba. And he realized these people are just out of control and spent the rest of the years of his presidency kind of get that control back. And the UFO file was involved in all that. So what Kennedy was trying to do was get that agency back because he realized it was a completely unconstitutional power that it possessed. And even Harry Truman, who set it up in 1947, came out with an op-ed afterwards saying CIA kind of mend it or end it, because if it does, you don't reform it, then you're going to have to get rid of it because it doesn't reflect our values. We set it up to gather intelligence for the president, and instead it's invading countries on its own. And by the way, it has its own air force. So we have to get our minds wrapped around how does that reflect in what we're dealing with now? Well, when you see these CIA, ex-CIA directors coming out trying to control the narrative of a story of an event that took place 57 years ago, you have to try to connect those dots and figure out why would they be doing that? What kind of control of reality would you need? So there's a memory holding process that's taking place. And that book just got released a couple weeks ago. And as I mentioned, the co-author died. And, you know, he was a Romanian intelligence guy. Something strange about him dying as the book is released. And, you know, let's just say, as far as timing goes, it's quite unusual. Everyone, it's great to have everyone here with us. As I mentioned, Kat is out there running the Ideas Room for us. And, you know, tonight is a special report. I wanted to get something that we could work with and incorporating all this knowledge, because I really think that we need to take advantage of this window of opportunity where people on the left and people on the right and people in the middle and libertarians and Green Party and all these people are becoming aware of what's going on, and they, you know, they need to get together and push back this fascist push for the most important thing is they're trying to get rid of our speech. They've already, you know, did the fascist lockdowns. It is costing them. I'll tell you, it's costing them on a couple of levels, because Cuomo is now fried. If they had any intentions of running him for president at some point, it's over. Because, you know, he killed Granny multiple times. And then Gavin Newsom, you know, his lockdown strategies were so draconian. And he came out and touted himself saying, hey, you know, I've got I can activate martial law if I want to. He actually said that at a press conference when this all started, really revealing who these people are. Remarkable. But a recall effort is underway, and now it looks like it's going to be successful, and they will get Gavin Newsom recalled. A recall for Newsom in California. Talk grows as governor comes under attack. Fellow Democrats have closed ranks around Gavin Newsom, because they have to, lavishly praising his handling of the pandemic, where he locked everyone in their house and destroyed the livelihood and hundreds of thousands of businesses. But conservatives say his shutdowns have been destructive. He is, in essence, going down, and so is Cuomo, ultimately. So there's going to be some casualties to that whole process politically, because what you're going to see is that, you know, basically the Gates World Order type people, the World Economic Forum types, they just want to get their minions to do this stuff. If they get fried in the process, it's their own tough luck, frankly. And so the idea is they're just kind of kissing up to this process. But at a certain point, that process might throw you overboard. And that's what a lot of these guys don't realize. You know, Gavin Newsom is like, hey, my aunt, you know, is Nancy Pelosi, and her uncle and her brother are mafia, you know. So how can I get destroyed in this process? But you can, Gavin, because when you pull the plug and you announce that you can have a totalitarian state in California and then you shut down jobs, then you run the ability that 2 million people will sign signatures for your recall, and that you might wind up losing your governorship to somebody like Richard Grenell. And Grenell is a guy who was the director of national intelligence for a while and came out of that whole Trump milieu, and very effective guy. He's targeting that governorship. And some of those things I mentioned about Pelosi, she's holding these hearings that Pelosi initiates, plan to control what people say and post on social media. And Pelosi just holding these meetings being like, we have to get people to stop talking, you know. And that's what a lot of the lockdowns were about. And Pelosi here at 81 years old, just like Biden at 78 years old. And don't get me wrong, I know many people in their 80s and 90s who have full control of their mental faculties and can run circles around anybody, but not Pelosi and not Biden. Biden is having problems. Have you noticed there hasn't been a State of the Union? There's always a State of the Union at the end of January. They haven't even had a virtual one. And they said, well, eventually he'll address Congress. Well, do you mean the State of the Union? Are you afraid to say the Union?
What's going on here? So this is very strange, and nobody in the media is pressing any of it. It's like, oh, you know, well, he'll do it when he wants to do it. It doesn't work that way. The State of the Union is always done at the end of January, and every president has done it. Every incoming president has done it. So it's, you know, it's an unusual set of circumstances. Going a little further into that, though, you know how I mentioned that the order that was signed by Trump, which was the National Security Action Memorandum 57, which was initiated by Kennedy but was never able to be ratified, the person who got that and it invoked JFK during the signing of that was Ezra Cohen. And Ezra Cohen is somebody who's a very interesting character operating around the intelligence activities at the Pentagon. And he put out something interesting, which I think we need to keep our eye on, especially with him. I think he uses a lot of steganography in a sense. But he said, "Great news. Glad the CIA will finally recognize serious harm caused by these attacks on their personnel. Must quickly integrate this task force into standing interagency efforts so that we can move forward with this whole government response." This is all about how those diplomats in Cuba were under this kind of microwave attack. And the weird thing about the diplomats is that they reported that when they came back to America, they were still under that weird attack. And so they were diagnosed with things like acoustic concussions, or they were diagnosed with, you know, hallucinations or whatever it was. And then some people, you know, there were all these kind of bland theories like, oh, you know, it was because of a certain type of bird that was in Cuba or something. But the real investigation found that they were being targeted for these things, and somebody did not want those U.S. diplomats in Cuba. And then Cuba was recognized as a terror state again after the Obama administration had originally opened it up. So a lot of weird things going on in the hot zone. As you know, we follow it closely here. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. It's great to see so many of you out there. We're at a very kind of critical point where post-election, you know, and all the hijinks around the election that we watched, we're in this aftermath period, and it's kind of a toxic aftermath period because you've got the aftermath of the fascist takeover of the medical emergency, piggybacking in this fascist control, lockdown, stay in your house, the Constitution doesn't matter, you know, you can't gather, and the kind of police state activities. So there's a window here for us to push it back, and you see people on the right and the left doing this. We need to get together, I think, and put aside sort of small differences politically. I've always been an independent in any case. And, you know, I tend to side with more libertarian ideas and on the side of populism. And that's why, you know, a lot of the Trump stuff was all based around a populist agenda, whether or not he could bring that forward or whatever it happened to be. That whole movement was all based around that kind of populism. And it's the very thing that these groups are targeting. Now that Trump isn't there as the president, they're going directly after the populace. And this is the first thing that you have to do is shut off their communications. That's what you do in a war situation. When a group comes in and they're taking over the place, they always go for the newspapers and the radio because they don't want people hearing things and understanding what's taking place. And that's exactly what you see this group doing. So there's a lot of channels that are open for us to have these discussions. And while these channels are open for us to have these discussions, that's what we're going to do. So I don't take for granted even this moment where we're talking about it right now. Okay. Merrick Garland, the little minion who wants to pull off the domestic terror bill. You know, Merrick Garland was the Supreme Court justice nominee that Obama wanted to try to rifle through at the end of his administration, and it didn't happen. He's a very sketchy character, and he is now under consideration to be, you know, Biden has selected him as attorney general, and the Senate is questioning him to pass him. What he's trying to do
is create the definition of a domestic terrorist. And he said, you know, the center thing for us is going to be domestic terrorism, which is really weird, because if you actually go into the stats around that, the types of things that he's talking about, you know, white supremacy, those numbers and those groups are actually going down. This is the weird thing about it. The groups that are actually going up are groups like Antifa and the Chinese funded Black Lives Matter group. And, you know, the name is great, Black Lives Matter, because, of course, that's important. But the what the group does and the kind of tactics that we saw of them blowing up cities and stuff like that, that's where, you know, that kind of funding and that kind of Marxist activity and the Chinese connection with it, that has nothing to do with forwarding minority rights at all. So this is very interesting. Merrick Garland says Antifa attacks on courthouses aren't domestic terrorism because they happen at night. I kid you not. There he is. Good old Merrick. He's going to be the attorney general under Biden. And he says Antifa attacks on courthouses aren't domestic terrorism because they happen at night. So I guess you could presumably say that, well, if you attack any building at night, then it's not a crime under Attorney General Merrick Garland. This type of very strange behavior on the part of the officials that Biden is putting forward, you know, it's like at all costs, the groups that are there for our chaotic purposes, we have to protect them. But even the USA Today, which is really, you know, an establishment newspaper, even they were questioning this. And I'll just read a little quick thing. Defining a terrorist, there might easily be a consensus today that someone smashing into the Capitol to stop an electoral count is a domestic terrorist. But what if tomorrow that label is applied to a Black Lives Matter, environmental, or guns rights activist? Just as important, what green light would the creation of a domestic terrorism law under federal investigators to begin monitoring of such conduct if, say, windows were smashed during a street demonstration, and would it pass constitutional muster? Strangely, good questions from USA Today on that. What they're saying basically is something I was referring to earlier, which is, yeah, you know, we could use it on our enemies now, but then they could turn around and use it on us just as soon as they're done cleaning out those, you know, Trump supporters or populists or libertarians that they don't like. So this is really what's starting to occur on the left, even to people that are hostile to those types of groups. It's quite fascinating to me. This is what we're in the middle of. Even the people who would presumably benefit from being on this side are starting to question and look over at this thing. And there's this big thing sitting there, and it's got this, you know, it just rolled in through a very, very hijinked election. And it's sitting there now saying, you're not going to have the ability to talk, and we're going to shut down their ability to talk. And, you know, you're not going to be able to leave your home, and you're not going to be able to do this kind of thing, or we're going to do a protest against you or make you lose your job or whatever it is. That type of fascist control even scares its proponents on the left. That, I think, is absolutely fascinating and has to be kept in mind as these groups, left, right, center, libertarian, whoever they are, all of us push together to push this thing out. And if it gets pushed out into the open through conversations like this, more and more people have an opportunity to see it. And then it becomes, oh my God, you know, I can't believe this thing is here. We have to get rid of it. And that's exactly what they don't want. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We have gone deep here. I wanted to give you a special update on these emergency powers that are coming in. I want to remind you that this weekend we have a special Hot Zone presentation coming up before the 3-year anniversary of the X series, which will kick off a week from Friday with X100, which has been under development for a long time. And we will have Miss Olivia with us for that. We're going to do a 3-parter. And that's going to cover some interesting things that we've found that have really connected the work that we've been doing on this. And I've really, you know, the Hot Zone and the activities around the Caribbean and the geopolitics, the ancient ruins, the land rising, this is something that we're really keying up to bring to you, along with a few surprises for that X100. So you don't want to miss it.
We'll take a couple more moments to wrap this episode up. And I wanted to point out that the domestic terror bill, really, if there's one thing, you know, and I always like to watch administrations and not jump too quickly down their throat before I know what they're up to, just to get some feeling and to let them present their stuff and what they plan to do on all their sneaky politics around it. But in this case, what's really front and center for the Biden administration is to stop free speech. This is what the Democrats are after. They think they can get it with the domestic terror bill, which basically allows agencies like the NSA to dime in on you without a warrant. It allows groups like the FBI, who for some reason are identifying this as the top thing. They don't care about Antifa. They don't care about Black Lives Matter, who blow up cities. They just care about this, you know, oh, there's a white terror threat. You know, and look, there's white terror, there's yellow terror, there's, you know, you just go on and on. Of course, all these groups have different aspects like that. You can't target one out. It's ridiculous. And so, you know, this thing that we're seeing has nothing to do with going after groups who are actually terrorists, because the idea would be you would do it across the board, of course. But to signal it out this way is to say we will be able to label anyone who says, I'm a populist, or I believe in gun rights, or, you know, I'm not politically correct or whatever. We'll be able to label those people as terrorists and get rid of them, you know, shut them down, shut down the network, shut down their influence on other people, and stop that narrative from being shared. Now, you know, I actually believe in a real holistic message around politics, and you know, I don't enjoy very divisive politics myself. Nonetheless, we have the Bill of Rights in this country, and you can't stop people from expressing their opinion. So, you know, these types of draconian laws are the King George type laws that got us the American Revolution, and that's very deep in our DNA, just like the whole 60s revolution is very deep, along with the memory of the king who was killed, you know, with John F. Kennedy in this case. He was the president, of course, but this is on the archetype level. That's really what it is. And so there was kind of a secret murder back there. And one of the interesting things before they bought Bob Dylan's entire record catalog out was he put out a 17-minute song called Murder Most Foul, which was all about the JFK assassination. So these things, you know, if you really get a handle on what they are, you can see that the very same force that is behind assassination and replacing the president back in 1963, and then moving through society and creating this, you know, you can't talk about this or you're a conspiracy theorist. That very same force is active in the domestic terror bill. And I've actually tied in before the words of President Kennedy warning of just that kind of a bill coming out. All right, so I'm going to save for the end here just a spooky little thing that has to do with a prediction long ago by a mystic named Edgar Cayce that we cover on this program quite a bit. And this is all about Mount Etna's latest eruptions awe even those who study volcanoes. Something really major going on when it comes to Mount Etna. And we've also been seeing incredible asteroid activity. So you have this combination of volcanic activity and asteroid activity. And then you see these groups like the Davos crowd trying to lock down society. And you start to say, is there a relevant connection to these things that we're witnessing? And my answer is absolutely yes. And I think people like Joseph Farrell, you know, I can tell you from deep conversations with people like Farrell and Catherine Fitz that they certainly do believe that there are connections to these things. Edgar Cayce left behind an incredible legacy. Of course, he's going to be heavily featured in the Hot Zone episodes because he gave us most of the information about Atlantis. But he also made some unusual predictions about our future in the 21st century. Because of that Mount Etna explosion, I just want to read you one that sits out there in time and space for me. This is reading 270-35, which he gave in 1936. And he says, quote, if there are the greater activities in the Vesuvius or Pele, then the southern coast of California and the areas between Salt Lake and the southern portions of Nevada may expect within 3 months following same an inundation by earthquakes. But these we find are to be more in the southern than in the northern hemisphere. This puzzled people for years because they were wondering what he was getting at. There was a follow-up reading where he said, there'll be upheavals in the Arctic and in the Antarctic that will make for the eruption of volcanoes in the torrid areas. And there will be a shifting then of the poles so that where there has been those of a frigid or a semi-tropical will become the more tropical and moss and fern will grow. These will begin in these periods. And then there's another prediction down here, which I abbreviated, about strifes that will arise through the period. Watch for them through the Davis Strait, which is between Greenland and Canada. Now, this is interesting because the attempts there for the keeping of a lifeline to land open. So this is something that we're going to open up in the X series, of course. But think about why you would need to keep a lifeline to land open there from Greenland to California. And he also warns there about Syria and the Persian Gulf. Casey identified directly Mount Etna, and he said, if you see activities in Mount Etna and then you see activities in the volcanoes in the South Pacific, then you'll know that this period has begun and that earthquake pattern will start. And we know that he believed that there'd be a major earth changes pattern that would take place in the 21st century. We may be arriving in that period, and these people who are at the helm of the leadership right now, they may be just as aware of this as somebody like I am from studying these things, and they may have very deep, deep information that goes beyond all of us about what is happening in terms of Earth changes on planet Earth, including land rising in the Caribbean and off the Florida coast. So this, I think, sets us up well for the hot zone presentation that is coming up for you this weekend. And I want to remind you to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up there for our newsletter. And that's something that will keep in touch with you and let you know all the incredible guests and the shows and X-series episodes delivered directly into your inbox. And if you become a subscriber there and support the show, we really appreciate it. Some of the people in the ideas room tonight who supported us, thank you very much. And of course, to all our subscribers, we really appreciate it. Kat, you did an excellent job out there in the ideas room. Thank you. And I'll do a couple of shout outs before I go. We've got Plan B. It's great to see you, sir. Ms. Tree. Sarah. Joseph Fabry. Gypsy Moon. Wow. Great crowd out there tonight. Indiana Joe. It's great to see you. Deborah Blair. Fantastic to have you with us. Mark Anthony. Pamela. Wow. This is a great crowd tonight. Fantastic. I'm so glad we got to do this update for you too, because so many things have been going on in the news that I've just been like, you know, while we're working on these X series episode, I just had to get this update out to you because we're definitely at that window. It's such a crucial point for us, I think, in humanity at this time, that we have to understand the forces that are trying to shut speech off and, you know, fill everyone with experimental DNA injectables. This is just the nature of the situation. Catherine Harris, it's great to see you out there. I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. The Observer. I know a cult fan is out there somewhere. And Golden Girl. Fantastic. Wow. Excellent. We will see everyone back this weekend coming up and with a special Hot Zone presentation. And then we'll be back a week from Friday with X Series 100 on the third anniversary of the X Series. So we'll get that X steganography ready for you. And speaking of X steganography, as I go out, I'm going to point out that the Federal Reserve had an incredible crash where people couldn't transact with it all day long. It seemed to be hacked for all intents and purposes. And they came out with Alert X, where they said their service status was XXX, and that X steganography was right in the heart of it. And I'll tell you, one of the groups that are they're looking to recruit for this. There's an intelligence group in the Air Force that they're looking to kind of work with for this domestic terror bill. And there's a lot of ex-steganography involved there with that ISR agency. So the ex-steganography and SpaceX, of course, alive and well. Wow, I have other things to go over with you, but we will get to it when I see you for the Return of the X series. And someone sent this to me. I have to show this, which is, I guess there's a cartoon guy out there named Jack Creeper or Creeper Toons. And he did some kind of a animation. I haven't seen it, but they've sent me some pictures of it. And they have people like me and Dolan and other stuff in there. I don't know what they're doing with it, but it seems to be funny. And certainly the artwork is there. But I guess that's me in the background. At the contact in the desert kind of thing, I guess. But I've never been there, of course. But it was great animation, and I think the stuff is just funny. I would love to see Creeper Toons or Jack Creeper. And so if he's out there, maybe he can send it to me. But a couple of people have sent me clips of his stuff, and it's just extraordinary artwork. So yeah, I would be up to see what he's doing. So thank you, everyone, for being here tonight. And like I said, we'll be back, and Miss Olivia will be back, and we'll be taking your questions for X100. Gear yourself up, because that's going to be a hardcore one. Kat, again, thank you very much for running the Ideas Room tonight, and we will see you all this weekend. Have a great afternoon tomorrow, and have a great evening tonight, and we will see you very, very soon. And, you know, it says end broadcast, but of course, it goes on. And it goes on. See you soon.